Hello again, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 4th of August, and we are going to go to an open line this hour. So whatever suggestions you have that are pertinent for discussion from 9 until 11, be it politics, be it the world of arts, terrific books that you have read, issues that are going on that you think deserve our attention, we're welcoming your phone calls. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050, 414-227-2050. John Anderson is answering our phones today. He'll chat with you for just a few moments, and then we'll be with you on the air, okay? And we got phones coming in right away, so let's go to them. Anne from Madison is our first caller. Hi, Anne.
Hey, welcome back to the USA.
Thank you.
I had another idea, too. Solzhenitsyn died over the weekend, and Gorbachev made a comment on his influence, I think, on him. You could probably get Gorbachev with a translator to talk about just all kinds of things, and including Solzhenitsyn, or maybe get somebody, you know, who knows what he did. I read the Gulag Archipelago, and it's the most chilling thing. You know, probably everybody has already read it, but I think he had a big influence. But I really called because the executive order of Bush on Thursday, I believe, consolidating all U.S. intelligence services, that would include military, you know, the naval intelligence and army intelligence, defense intelligence agency, national security agency, CIA, under one body, which would have a head appointed by Bush. I guess it would be a cabinet position, who would be accountable only to Bush, was established by executive order with no consulting with Congress. A bunch of members of Congress walked out as Bush was announcing this coup, and any dissent regarding this new agency or what it did would be handled in secret courts with the evidence to be kept secret. And the results, the decisions, to be kept secret from the public. We wouldn't have any right to know anything intelligence was doing anywhere in the United States. I think this is absolutely, you know, the pinnacle of peril to our Constitution, and it's hardly gotten any airplay at all. I don't think National Public Radio has talked about it once. I heard it on Pacifica. I'd love to have this talked about by... You used to talk to a law professor from Chicago who talked about the Valerie Plame case. I can't remember his name, but you had him on a bunch of times, and he's really well-known. I think he might be a good person. You know, somebody, a legal person, needs to talk about this issue, and the Senate needs to approve, you know, confirm him. But the Senate left blithely, and the House left blithely for vacation in the middle of all these crises without even a, you know, by your leave. I think that's really pretty shocking. And I just had one other thing, and that is when you had the last guest on, just as happened before the last election, gas prices all of a sudden are going down, down, down. You know, and Bush is yelling, we got to drill for offshore oil. And he mentioned, you know, that this hadn't started until recently. Somebody who is a conspiracy theorist might think that Bush has been colluding with his oil corporation head buddies to raise the prices to a certain level, at which point Americans would grasp at any straw, no matter how illogical, to get those prices lower. And I think that's what Bush has been doing. Wall Street is just burgeoning. So I'd like to hear somebody comment on what's really causing, you know, let's get somebody who can talk about, you know, just more in detail about where gas prices are being set, both retail and wholesale, and I think we could solve our problem there. And I guess they want a monopoly of all oil rights everywhere, not just in this country, here and offshore and in the Middle East. Wherever oil is, Bush and Cheney say, that's mine.
Okay. All right, Ann. You got a lot to put on the table.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Ann.
Uh-huh.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.
John from Madison. Hi.
Yeah, two things. A report came out on AIDS and said that they had underestimated the incidence of yearly AIDS by 40%. So instead of 40,000 cases, it's actually like 56,000. Instead of 1.1 million Americans living with AIDS, it's more like 1.3 million. So, and they gave incidences of what groups were involved. But I think an update on what's going on with AIDS would be very fascinating, since a third of 1% of the population has the disease. The thing that really caused me to call in today was that I read the New York Times editorial, the second one from the top, and it refers to a topic which is dear to my heart, namely that between 50 and 60,000 American workers die needlessly every year due to workplace exposure to toxins and chemicals. The government has known about this since 1994. I read about it. David Burns wrote a book, Above the Law, a Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter. And Ralph Nader says that most recently the statistics are 56,000 American workers died last year. So this is something that everybody ought to be concerned about. That's three times our homicide rate. 4,000 die in Iraq. Everybody throws their hands up. That 56,000 American workers die each and every year. Well, the thing that happened was, and this shows what a corrupt Republican administration we have and what's on the line for this upcoming election. The Department of Labor hasn't done anything about this. They have regulated only one toxic substance, and they were forced to by a court order. And what they're trying to do now is they're trying to water down the standards for figuring out toxicity for the American worker. This is their number one priority. This is what they're pushing through in the legislature, and everybody should get behind every Democrat they can and tell them to stop this right now. The agency's own findings said, well, I'll just read from the editorial in the New York Times. The agency's own staff experts challenged its legality and science, according to the Washington Post. This information came out in the Washington Post. And the one last thing I'd like to just throw in real quickly is I listened to Phil Corvo's show on Kathleen Dunn, Joy Cardine's show this morning. I think the most important function that Wisconsin Public Radio lots is that it allows a democratic expression from the citizenry concerning these experts. I don't personally like to listen to a lot of lectures, but I do like to listen to my fellow citizens ask questions of the experts, because I find they ask tougher, more appropriate questions than anybody could come up with. They're not constrained, and they ask stuff that I want to hear. So Corvo kind of indicated that what the public really wants to hear is a lot of questions from the expert hosts and stuff. I would disagree. What I want to hear is I want to hear my fellow Wisconsinites asking questions.
All right, John. Thank
I'm
you.
Throwing, yeah, thanks.
Yeah, thanks for the call. Ron from La Crosse. Hi.
Yes, I got a bone to pick, of course, with these oil companies, too. And what irritates me is that they advertise on television these ads with how sophisticated their technology is for finding oil under the land. Bethel Petroleum's got them and some other oil companies. But they have a lot of land to use that technology on, but they don't seem to be interested in it. And their guest in the previous hour explained why. I suppose it's probably more likely to find proven reserves under the sea on the outer continental shelf. So, you know, they advertise, they got this public relations snake oil campaign going on TV about how they're good at finding oil, but no, we don't care. It's easier to do offshore drilling. I just hate to see a repeat of the nightmare that occurred off Santa Barbara in 1969. Mm-hmm. I guess it was Union Pacific Oil or someplace. I'd also like to add, too, previous hours also mentioned something about an Energy Summit meeting. It was actually the first year of Bush's first term, 2001, that Cheney chaired this. And I just got, if somebody could do some investigative digging and find out why General Motors scrapped that all-electric car, the EV1, back in the 90s. Did that Energy Summit meeting in May of, I think, 2001 have anything to do with it? Because the news media were in a big flap because they weren't allowed to know what was discussed, although they were told who was in attendance at the meeting. And, of course, it was the heads of the oil industry and as well the heads of General Motors, and I just wonder if maybe the scrapping of the EV1 might have been in conjunction with that.
Did you see that film, Ron?
Yeah.
Whatever happened to the electric car? Yeah.
I never saw it.
You should see it. It's very interesting.
Yeah, and I just wonder if that energy summit, meaning Cheney chaired in 01, had anything to do with that.
Yeah.
The other thing, comment about McCain, he claims to be a maverick, and he's not the same as Bush. If he is so different from Bush, how come he didn't challenge Bush for the renomination in 04 for the Republican Party? It was the situation in Iraq, which was the paramount issue 4 years ago. The situation was clearly deteriorating by 03 and certainly beginning of 04. He could have ran again, and I think he could have beaten Bush out of the nomination, but instead he chose to be a party loyalist and, you know, defer to the imperial incumbent in the White House, despite the fact that Bush, Rumsfeld, Cheney were more interested in fighting in-house administrative turf wars with Colin Powell than winning the war in Iraq and Afghanistan. It just irritates me that McCain sat 04 out. I think he was derelict in his duties when our country needed better leadership.
All right. You got a lot on the table there, Ron. Thank you.
Okay. Bye.
Bye. Wayne from Green Bay. Hi.
Yes. Good morning, Kathleen.
Hi, Wayne.
Say, Kathleen, whereas most often things do not get done in Washington because of the filibuster in the Senate, I'd like to have you have a guest on who could give us some history of the filibuster. And really, how do we get rid of it? I don't care which party's in power. It just stymies the people's work. And, of course, I don't need to go over all the things that's happened just this last year. But we're not moving forward, and I believe that's the reason why. So that's basically what I'd like to see if you could get a guest who talked to that subject.
Okay, Wayne.
Thank you.
Good. Thanks for the call.
Bye.
Frank from Madison. Hi.
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 I have two suggestions as a guest. And I'd like to preface it by saying that John Kenneth Galbraith, some 20 years ago, wrote a book called The Culture of Contentment, and he suggested that there would be only a change from a ruinous government complacency and consumerism if there was a major collapse. And we're on the edge of one. And how we got here, and whether or not there will be a positive response to our circumstance once it becomes truly clear is an open question. But there's an excellent book on how our current situation was contrived by Thomas Frank, and it's called The Wrecking Crew.
Okay.
And it details the agenda and march to dominance of the right and anti-government, deregulated markets. And it would be really worthwhile having him as a guest. And James Galbraith, John Kenneth Galbraith's son, has a similar book. So they would make good guests. And then, of course, William Grider has an excellent article called Free Fall in the Nation, and he documents how we got to where we are in the markets.
How do you spell William's last name, Frank?
Hmm?
William's last name.
Grider.
Okay.
Sorry, if I didn't say it. Thanks.
All right. Bye. Thank you. Uh-huh. Bye. Let's go to Lynn from, where are you from, Lynn?
I'm from Wausaukee.
Oh, Wausaukee. Okay,
yes,
Lynn.
Yes. Hi. We have a little situation up here in our rural school. Our school board has decided to go for dissolution of our school district.
Ooh.
Two referendums have failed. We have another one coming up in August. But the issue here is that our students in the rural areas, the funding to the district is far less than what the urban students are allowed. And so many of these rural districts are finding it very difficult to operate, and they're being forced to dissolve. And I would like to hear someone from the state who has decided that the property taxes up here are what funds our school. I would like someone to come on and explain to us how in the world these poor rural schools are going to be able to sustain themselves. We are very land rich, but income poor, and it's a crying shame that our small schools and our small communities are going by the wayside because we have no schools.
So what are they doing? Are they merging with other areas or what?
Well, what will happen is if this next referendum in August fails, then the state education board or the Madison will come in and decide where our students will go. They will draw new boundary lines, which means that, you know, the kids could possibly be on a bus for hour and a half to 2 hours in, you know, twice a day. And then all of our bills and everything will be divided up between those districts. So now these local districts who would take our students on would then be able to tax the taxpayers of the district at whatever rate they want, because they're going to have to take on our deficit. And so it's really a very difficult issue up here for many people. And, you know, again, we're from a rather poor area, a lot of retired people who just simply can't afford these taxes to keep going up. But the funding for our school system is quite inequitable.
Well, if you have a guest you'd like to recommend, I'd be interested in doing a show on that, Lynn. So,
and we do have some of our assemblymen and local politicians have sat in on some of these meetings here, and so we have from RV Boys here. You know, I don't know who we would contact with. Maybe Elizabeth Burmeister could come in and talk to us about how this is happening to our, you know, to our rural schools. And what we need to do in the legislature to talk to these politicians and say, look, you got to come up with a different way, because the people up here, you know, it's really quite unfair that our children up here get funded so little and the kids in the cities are funded totally.
Well, the kids in the cities aren't getting funded as to the extent they should either. So,
well, and there you go.
Right.
And that's another, well,
yeah.
All
right,
it's a long story. Go back to Iraq War.
Right. All right. We'll do this prior to the opening of school.
Okay. So thank you much.
Thanks so much for your call. Oh, we got to pause, and we'll return. It's our open line for the month of August. We're welcoming your suggestions for this time frame from 9 in the morning until 11. The number is 800-486-8655. Or if you're in Milwaukee, it's 414-227-2050. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Okay, we go back to phone calls for our open line for August. And let's go to Eugene from Viola. Hi, Eugene.
Good morning, Kathleen.
Hi.
I'm headed for Shannon Airport next year.
Are you?
You bet I am.
Bring a lot of money, Eugene.
That airport sits in a rural area.
Yeah.
It's pretty rare and pretty easy to get at.
Right.
But anyway, the suggestion that I had, make it a little bit lighter, even with our economy the way it is O. Henry. O. Henry, he wrote 12 books, 275 stories, The Gift of the Magi. She cuts off her hair to buy him the watch, Bob. He sells the watch to buy her the combs. And you never knew how his story would end to the last paragraphs. And another one was The Cisco Kid. They turned that into a radio program, and later it went to television on that. And he was, you know, he was just a wonderful author. And that would just make for a lighter moment.
You want a lighter moment?
Yeah, well,
I know what you're saying.
There's not much you can do about it.
Right.
More or less. Okay, thanks much.
Thanks, Eugene.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Bye. Pam from Fenimore is next. Hi, Pam.
Hi. How are you?
Good, how are you?
Great. Welcome back.
Thank you.
I have a suggestion, and what I'm interested in, the topic is the anthrax case that's been in the news last week. And the angle is, I think ABC news sources need to be investigated, because they started the idea in the media that the anthrax came from Iraq. And I think a good guest would be Glenn Greenwald from Salon.com. He's a U.S. constitutional lawyer. And he's written a lot about different issues like the FISA Act and this act. Anthrax was said to be come from Iraq, you know, that was used and sent to, I think, like Peter Jennings maybe, and a couple of Democratic
Tom Brokaw, Tom Daschle.
Right. Those people were against the Patriot Act, but after they were sent anthrax, they changed their mind. And ABC News used four sources that claim that the anthrax came from Iraq, but it turns out that it really came from the same U.S. governmental lab that was used to test the samples of anthrax from those very letters.
Right.
And this happened right after 9/11. Another one that was sent to was like a editor from maybe the Inquirer or something. He got some too. And I think he died. And anyway, one lab worker, you know, a biologist or a lab worker, very intelligent person, was accused of starting the whole thing and sending out the letters. And he fought back, and he won a defamation lawsuit for over $5 million.
Right.
And now this guy, another lab scientist from the same lab, apparently committed suicide Tuesday, and he had been found dead, and his social worker is in the news claiming that this guy was so unstable. But actually, according to Glenn Greenwald, this social worker witness is kind of questionable, and he's pointing out how questionable a source this is. And other experts are pointing out that ABC News sources are the ones that need to be investigated because they started the idea in the media that this anthrax came from Iraq. And remember, back then, 9/11 was a reason to go to war with Iraq, and so was anthrax,
right,
because it came from Iraq, and that was part of the weapons of mass destruction. So I know that journalists need to protect their sources when they're whistleblowers, but when a source tosses a red herring in the media, that needs to be investigated, and this story needs to be published in the media for us, you know, the people, the citizens of the government, to find out what's going on, because we end up fighting these wars and paying for them. And this is just, this just needs to be brought out in the media, and I hope that you find somebody. Glenn Greenwald would be great, and his columns, I recommend them highly for people that want to know what's really going on.
And he's at Salon, is that what you said?
Salon.com.
Okay.
He is wonderful. I've been following him for a couple of years now, as well as you. And I saw you in Dubuque earlier this year. And
great, Pam.
Yeah.
Good.
Thank you so much.
All right, thanks. Yeah, that would be a good story for us to follow. Let us go to Joanne from West Allis. Hi, Joanne.
Hi, Kathleen. Welcome back.
Thank you.
I would like to suggest as guests Stuart and or Jill Briscoe from the Elmbrook Church.
Mm-hmm.
They are now ministers at large. Between them, they've written over 100 books and on marriage, family. They just celebrated their 50th wedding anniversary. But they travel around the world constantly and talk a lot about America being a post-Christian culture.
Mm-hmm.
I think they would be fascinating guests on any number of subjects.
And okay.
They've been in the Milwaukee area for 38 years now.
Oh, my.
From England originally, and they are fascinating as far as their viewpoints on the world and American culture.
Okay, that sounds good. I've interviewed them many, many years ago, but not recently.
Okay.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Uh-huh. Bye. Julie from Mezumeni. Hi, Julie.
Hi, Kathleen. How are you?
Good, how are you?
Pretty fine. I have a guest that I would love to recommend. One of your recent callers was talking about, you know, people being aware of what's going on in our world right now. I just finished a book. The author's name is E. Benjamin Skinner, and the book was just published this summer. It's called A Crime So Monstrous. And Skinner's topic is slavery in our day, actual slavery that is existing right here in the United States, where, you know, domestic servants are being kept and beaten and hidden from the public. Talks about things like the prostitution, the kidnapping of young women and prostitution in Europe, and different types of slavery, sweatshops. And this gentleman has toured the world. He has met and interviewed a lot of these slaves. And the sad thing is that a lot of this is going on in countries that our country has trade relationships with, has tourism relationships with. People in our government have made attempts to step in and clamp down on the slavery, and then for various economic reasons turn a blind eye. And it was just really a revelation, very moving, and I think Skinner would be a great guest.
Okay. And the name of the book is what? Slavery?
A Crime. It is called A Crime So Monstrous.
A Crime So Monstrous.
And then his subtitle is Face to Face with Modern Day Slavery.
Okay.
And I'd love to hear him. It was just a fabulous book. He's a journalist, so he wrote the book from a very practical, pragmatic viewpoint.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Bye. Jake is next from Oshkosh. Hi, Jake.
Hello.
Hi.
I have two suggestions. First one is there is a website, thestoryofstuff.com. The author of that website would be great to have on. It basically talks about consumerism and how basically American culture was kind of designed into being a consumeristic type of culture,
mm-hmm.
you know, where we're happy to buy stuff and we're unhappy when we work, so we buy and we get in this big vicious cycle of using too many resources. The second point is how the current cabinet and past cabinet, mainly Donald Rumsfeld, Dick Cheney, and President Bush, how they seem to be above the law. All their, you know, transcriptions and conversations are all able to be kept secret. It seems like they don't have to answer to anyone, and that seems concerning.
Okay. So you'd like you're looking for a guest who would look at what?
You know, how they're able to do this and
the openness,
and how to counteract it.
Okay. Okay. Thank you, Jake, unless there's more?
Nope.
All right. Thank you. Thanks for the call. A couple lines are open at 800-486-8655, 227-2050 in Milwaukee. Peggy is next from Pittsville. Hi, Peggy.
Hi.
Hi.
Have I got a book for you? It is right up your alley. It's called The Story of Edgar Sawtelle.
Okay.
It's written by... Oh, a guy who graduated from Pittsville High School. But don't let that throw you off. It's about a boy whose family raises dogs. It's got a real... It's the dog thing. I knew that'd get you. his family raises dogs, and they're really remarkable dogs. And the book has kind of a Hamlet plot where... the father's uncle shows up, and the father mysteriously dies. And the boy has to go on a journey with some of his dogs.
Hmm. So. Okay.
Oh, the only thing is it's over 500 pages.
That's all right. That's a fine number of pages, don't you think?
I do.
I do, too.
Once you're done, you kind of wish there were more pages.
All right. Great. We'll look it up.
Thank you.
Because how could I pass it by when you say, have I got a book for you?
Right? Just for you.
Thanks, Peggy.
All right.
Uh-huh. Bye. Raymond from Milwaukee. Hi.
Good morning. I'd like to hear something from one of the wives of the 9/11 tragedy, who were the original group that pushed for the 9/11 commission. They have been pushing to have that reopened because now transcripts from Zacharias Moussaoui's court appearance and things the FBI said there are in complete contradiction with the 9/11 report. And also the lady asking about Iraq and the anthrax, if she looked a little deeper into that story, she would see that the same strain of anthrax that was used in those letters, our government had sent that same strain to Iraq in the mid-80s when Saddam was one of our allies. And Saddam apparently was going to use it on his own people or the Iranians. So she only has part of that story right. I agree with her that it was part of the hype to build up to the Iraq War. But if you look a little deeper, there's something more to that, the fact that we were actually sending that biological weapons material. We were sending it to Saddam in the 80s. And that is the connection ABC made. But I guess they were also in the drumbeat to... Bring us into war, this phony war with Iraq.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you. Thanks for the call. Dan from Madison. Hi. Hi, Dan.
Kathleen, hello.
Hello, Dan.
I'm a past petroleum geologist, and I think it would be excellent because, you know, it's easy for everybody to become reactionary with today's petroleum costs to say that it's a big conspiracy and all of these other notions, when in fact, I think if we get some experts on that can talk about, number one, the actual science behind exploring for oil, both in the United States and worldwide, and then technically getting that oil out of the ground, refining it, transporting it to where it can go in somebody's car, and then you follow up with that with a true look at the economics of what it costs to explore and drill for oil and produce it, and then also the taxation, both economically here in the United States and worldwide, and how that really equates to the price of gasoline that somebody pays at the pump.
Mm-hmm.
Oil companies in the United States are not some giant conglomerate with some guy smoking a cigar sitting in the 34th floor of some high-rise building. It's people working hard for a living and competing in a world economy where the price of oil is not set by people here in the United States. It's set by the world market, which is controlled primarily in the Middle East. And I think having a balanced conversation of where does oil really come from, what's it really cost, and how does that play into world economics, and how much oil companies here in the United States with investment here in the United States, whether it's drilling offshore or on land, how that really creates a return on investment and what kind of investment they can put back into the ground to look for more reserves or produce the reserves that they've got in the ground with better efficiency, such as secondary recovery.
Right. So what do you think, Dan? Are you our guest?
Really, I think you'd be better served by any of the major oil companies or even some of the smaller continental companies that we have here, the independents in the United States, who have people on staff who could really talk about this. I used to be in the business for 15 years. I was an exploration geologist with my own company.
Hmm.
I've moved on to educational filmmaking about sciences for school kids. So
it's
a different endeavor. But nonetheless, this notion that it's so easy to grab onto that oil companies are these big monstrous people that are ripping off the American economy to make themselves wealthy is really a misnomer because, like I said, the economics and the technology and the science behind it has two frameworks, one within the continental United States and number two, worldwide. And that's also going to hark in the future from what I'm hearing from some of the political wavering out there on windfall profits tax of oil company. And to tax oil producers and oil explorers in the United States and to take away their profits and their ability to find more oil and to produce more oil from the wells that they do find.
Mm-hmm.
Keep in mind, when you drill a well here in the United States, in many places, the optimum oil that you're going to get out of place for what's trapped in the ground is about 20% of actual reserves. That means you're leaving 80% of the petroleum down there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where secondary recovery projects, which cost a ton of money to institute, but extends the life of the well and the ultimate recoverable for reserves well into the future, you know, that should come into play, too, both in the economics and the taxation of how it all works.
Okay.
So those are some suggestions. I know it's a plateful, and you're going to have to do a little digging to come up with experts, but I did want to frame what the real picture is here and how easy it is to get sidetracked into one little avenue that this is a giant conspiracy by oil companies, Bush, even though I don't care for Bush and that administration. Nonetheless, the fact of the matter is it's controlled by world pricing, science, technology, and the economics of producing in different parts of the world.
Okay. We appreciate your call, Dan.
All right, thanks.
All right, yeah, thanks very much for the call. And let's go next to John from Chippewa Falls. Hi, John.
Hello. Thanks, Kathleen. This is a bit different than some of the past ones. I'm interested in hearing some more about some of the issues going on in Western Africa. And, you know, there was a book out a couple of years ago by Ishmael Bia on Memoirs of a Boy Soldier,
mm-hmm.
A Long Way Gone. And he talked about some of the strife and things that he was pulled into as a child into the war in Sierra Leone. And so I guess I was just wondering if you could find a guest that could speak to some of these issues and children being pulled into, you know, war-torn or striped areas in Western Africa.
Okay. Great. Thank you, John.
Okay, thank you.
Bye. Saeed from Green Bay. Hi, Saeed.
Yes, good morning. I have two suggestions on two different topics. One is a documentary I recently saw titled 2 Million Minutes, which is the amount of time between graduation from the eighth grade to graduation from high school. And this documentary follows a cohort of American students in that period and compares them to a cohort of students from India and China. and draws some very sobering conclusions about the American high school experience. Unfortunately, I have my car, and I don't have the name of the individual, but there is a website by that name. If you were interested, you could look at that.
Okay.
The second I'm going to suggest a man by the name of Akbar Batebi, B-A-T-E-B-I, one of the most prominent Iranian political dissidents who in the last month managed to escape his political prison in Iran is in the United States. I have no idea how to get a hold of him, but he was a journalism student in his student days, was sent to cover a demonstration of students in a different university in Tehran, during which students were getting shot. And he managed to hold a bloodied shirt of a fallen soldier to the world cameras, the CNN cameras. And that picture ended up on the front of The Economist and became one of the icons next to the picture of the man standing in front of the tank in China during the Tiananmen Square debacle. This picture became one of the icons of the universal struggle for human rights. For that, he was imprisoned and tortured to within an inch of his life and has spent all of his adult life basically in prison. And I would love to hear a discussion with him to understand the thinking of a Iranian born after the revolution and raised in the educational system of the Islamic Republic, who then has essentially sacrificed his entire life for the pursuit of liberty.
Mm-hmm.
So those are my two suggestions.
All right. Thanks, Saeed, very much for your call.
Thank you.
Uh-huh. Bye. Dorothy is next from Madison. Hi, Dorothy.
Well, welcome back. I've missed you.
Thanks, Dorothy.
I would like you to give a whole hour program on Ireland. I have always loved Ireland. I love their music. Maybe Binchy was one of my favorite authors. I am old now, and then they had another show on the dancing in Ireland. I can't remember what they called it, but I loved watching them. They all kept so perfect step.
Right.
And I think they do have a woman president, don't they?
Yeah, they do.
And I would like you to talk about their government. Do they have a parliament or a democracy? And if you have relatives there, tell us about them. And tell us about Ireland. I love Ireland. And I'm German, but I don't know all my life. I've named my children, most of them, after Irish names. I have a Patrick and a Michael and a Mary.
Oh, my.
And there's something about Ireland that I've always loved.
Yeah, me too.
And I think it is doing very well now, isn't it? One of the best well-run countries in Europe.
Well, it's evidently one of the most prosperous, Dorothy, but the indications are that that prosperity may not last very long.
Oh.
They're having their own set of problems. What was most striking to me being there was the amount of building that's gone on all over the country.
Uh-huh.
New houses absolutely everywhere. So they've been doing very well the last 5 or 10 years, but things are starting to fall.
I hope they didn't get into that housing mess that we got into.
Well, that's what they're starting to get into, I'm afraid. So I hope those houses are finished.
Yeah, you know, that I think is the trouble. They want to copy United States. And we are good in some ways, but in lots of ways, capitalism is not the way to go.
Right. Right. And our dollar, I got to tell you, Dorothy, is worth nothing. It's just worth nothing. Yeah.
And that's why we should be getting more people coming here.
We are. Did you see that article in the Times yesterday about everybody from Europe coming to New York and buying as much as they can buy?
Oh, yeah.
Because their money is worth so much more.
That. I don't get the Times. I'm old. I hardly ever read anymore because my eyes are But I just think you should give a program on Ireland and your visit. That
All
would
right.
be very enjoyable.
All right, Dorothy. Thanks so much for the call.
You're welcome.
Uh-huh. Goodbye. We pause for a moment and we'll return. It's open line for the month of August. 800-486-8655 is the number. 414-227-2050 in Milwaukee. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are welcoming your phone calls. And I should also tell you, because I've forgotten to do so, that we'll receive emails from you, too, in case you can't get on the air today. Just send emails to Rhonda and me. Rhonda's email address is Fanning, F-A-N-N-I-N-G, at WPR.org. Mine is Dunk at WPR.org. So send those emails anytime. Sometimes we're very happy to receive emails from you, events we didn't really know about, and we booked them quite immediately. Okay, let's go to Marion is next from Richland Center. Hi, Marion.
I'm concerned about senior care. It's a prescription drug for Wisconsin only. Governor Doyle worked so hard to get it and then to keep it. And it's going to be expired now in 2009, and there's about at least 90,000 Wisconsin seniors on it.
Mm-hmm.
I wish you'd get somebody on there. People can still, I understand, can still try to get senior care, depending on their income, you know. And they need it so bad. So many, I got about 400 petitions when it was going to go off a year ago, when it was going to be expired, to send to Secretary Leavitt. President Bush's secretary, you know, in Washington, D.C., to please save senior care. Well, President Bush canceled it anyway, and then we got it back. Our senators got it back, and I would like somebody to come on and explain this to all the people. They don't understand. I try to get to the venues I can to tell them about the senior care. It is so good compared to senior care. Besides, I got a letter from Doyle, telling me how much it saves compared to President Bush's Part D prescription.
Mm-hmm.
It saves Wisconsin and the federal millions of dollars, and I don't understand why the other states, other governors don't go for it, because they're also in financial difficulty. All the states are, you know. Somebody should get on there and explain that, how we got it and how Governor Doyle worked so hard, and then how we lost it and how we got it back. And it was a miracle we got it back. I want to explain it now. I would like other people to explain it. And I would like somebody on there. It's so important to the seniors. I've been told if I can't get all my prescription drugs, I'm not going to take any. I can get some food now that I've been, you know, fruit or something that I haven't been able to buy. I've heard so many sad stories that this has just got to get out to the people.
Okay, thank you very much. We'll look at that issue, Marion.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks. By Dale Pert from Prairie du Chien. Hi, Dale.
Hello, Kathleen, and thank you for this venue for communicating with other people and sharing ideas. The concern I have is with a recent Judiciary Committee hearings on executive abuse of power. It was a six-hour-long presentation, and that had a two-minute. From what I got, I didn't get the entire interview, but a two-minute summation by one of the CNN hosts, and it was very dismissive, and it treated as though it was trivia. And they were talking about the abuse of power and the Constitution being abused and the Bill of Rights, our Bill of Rights, and they were recommending that people call into their legislatures to let them know that they want to have more hearings on the Judiciary Committee on this topic. And two guests that you could have in reference to this topic would be Philippe Sands, an English bannister who wrote the book The Torture Team, and then Bruce Fine, who was testified at the hearings, and he was a very articulate. He was the assistant deputy attorney general under Reagan, and one of the assistant attorney generals under Reagan.
Mm-hmm.
He did a very good job of presenting the facts very simply and quickly and easily understood. And, you know, it just takes more public input to make sure that this becomes a reality instead of being dismissed by the corporate news as something that distracts from making money. Also, in reference to this, a larger scope or a larger perspective of this would be to have Daniel Estulin on, who writes about the idea that there are groups of people that are directing. This is no accident what happens, and the Depression of 1929 was no accident. There are groups of people, and one of them is called the Bilderberg Group, and he wrote this book called The True Story About the Bilderberg Group. That would be an interesting interview. Or a Dan Hamburg and a Lewis Seeler. Dan Hamburg was a former California congressman, and Lewis Seeler was a president of an environmental organization, which name escaped me right at this moment, but they give an overview of what they think some individuals have in mind for the dismantling of our nation state and the and creation of a corporate state.
Okay.
Okay.
And all right.
Thank you for this time.
Thanks, Dale. Yeah, thanks bye-bye. For your call. Our number is 800-486-8655. Two lines are open. If you'd like to take one of them right now, you are entirely welcome to do so. Francis is next. Hi, Francis.
Hi, how are you?
All right, how are you?
I'm terrific, thank you. This is a very nice thing that you do up here on the public radio thing. I think that you should chat a little bit about get somebody on and talk about the five tenets of Islam and explain how they collide with Christianity and how they're trying to, you know, just why they're trying to do what they're doing and just get more of that information out into the public. And then I think you should chat a little bit about the reserve, the role between the reserves and the active service, and especially how the reserves deal with the heartland and how a lot of the people that are citizen soldiers spend their time every month and then 2 weeks out of the year to support the active duty services and how they bring that back into the community here. The reserve part, you can actually, there's several, like the Army Reserve Association and the Navy Reserve Association, and I think the Air Force has something similar like that. They have a lot of people that'd be interested in talking how the desire for the states to support that to go up through the national or throughout to the national government, how they do the funding and that sort of thing. There is a effort to tear down the structure of the reserves.
Can you speak up a little bit, please?
Yes, I'm sorry. There is an effort on the national side of dismantling the reserve relationship with because they're trying to move all the reserve or all the functions into the active duty forces, and it would just be I think interesting to get that information back out to the people in the rest of the United States.
All right, thanks, Francis.
Thank you.
Uh huh. Bye, Bob from Stevens Point. Hi, Bob.
To get off the presidential topics, especially, you know, where we're not really getting into anything substance. It's all the mechanics of the campaign. You just got back from Ireland. Why did they refuse the EU?
They didn't. They're a member of the EU.
What was the vote that was just taken?
Oh, you know, I can't believe you're asking me this because I've spent a good portion of the last couple of days trying to figure out the Lisbon Treaty and why the Irish are opposed to it. And every Irish newspaper I had assumed that the public reading the paper knew the basics of all of this, and I must admit that I didn't know the basis. So the stories were all, Ireland has decided to reject this. Ireland has decided to reject this. This is a good thing for Ireland to reject this. And I could never figure out what the heck they were rejecting. It was driving me crazy. So that's one of my tasks to do when I get back. They are a member of the EU, but there's something about a Lisbon Treaty that I must say I didn't fully understand, Bob.
Okay, but that'd be a good guess.
All right.
Yeah, bye-bye.
All right, thanks. Bye. Don is next from New London. Hi, Don.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Say, I don't really know who would talk about this, but I guess my point would be the listeners bring up a lot of real good issues, and they are always asking for somebody else to make a law or talk to Congress or a complaint about somebody. I would like to hear somebody who actually has some personal responsibility views on things that we could do in our own personal lives to affect some of these issues as far as saving money and educating our children and things like that in our own personal lives rather than relying on the government to do everything for us.
Mm-hmm.
And with your vast experience with all the people you've talked to over the years, you may know someone.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks, Don. Pat is next from Appleton. Hi, Pat.
Hi, good morning, Kathleen.
Hi, Pat.
I just have my own question that I've been curious about, and that is where does all of our oil go that we're currently pumping domestically? I had heard that our Alaskan oil is going to Japan.
Right. I hear it's going on the world market.
Well, I don't know. That's what I wonder. You know, nobody ever talks about all the oil that we're pumping now,
mm-hmm.
and where is it going?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we have a right to know.
I just,
you know?
Yeah, we just need to do a show on oil, don't we? Where it's coming from and who sets the price and whether or not it should be drilled and how much is there and all of that. Just sort of your basic oil show, right?
Well, that would work, but I really want to know where, how much oil are we pumping, you know, domestically and where is it going?
Okay.
So that's my idea.
I think it's a very good idea.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Thanks. Goodbye. And let's go to Wendy from Hawkins. Hi, Wendy.
Hi, Kathy. Good morning.
Hi.
I'd like to hear a show on puppy mills.
Okay.
Oprah had one on her show, and it seems like you got to go through a bunch of red tape, just like everything else, to have this stuff stopped. And I believe these people that have these puppy mills that treat these dogs and cats or any kind of animal bad should have the same treatment done to them, and I think they should get prison time. Then you find a guy with a couple seeds of marijuana in his ashtray, and he goes to jail for 20 years, you know.
Okay. Thank you for the suggestion. We're plumb out of time, and I appreciate your suggestions. Thanks to John Anderson for answering these many phone calls and to Rhonda Fanning for producing the show. We'll follow through on many of the suggestions, and thank you for them and for listening.